Good evening. Welcome, everybody. And welcome to the premiere of Clemens von Wedemeyer, The Cast, which belongs to a new strand we launched at State Film in February with Philip Wornell, Mings of Harlem screening, and followed by a screening and a season on Albert Serra. When we launched this new strand of artist film, we considered that we will need to have at least three good reasons to focus on artist film, which is a peculiar category. The first reason is that we will need a state to start or restart conversation with artists that are already part of our collection, that deal with and work with moving images, or artists that we would like to have as part of our collection, or artists we will need to have a discussion in order to develop future projects. The second reason is actually that we need to start also a stronger conversation with artists that are working in between moving images and art. They are challenging the border between the museum and what's happening in the actual museum and within the history of contemporary art and contemporary art that deals with time-based media work within the museum and film. And the third reason is actually that we were keen to transform what will be happening this evening in a special event. So we are not looking only for a screening, but we are trying to somehow push the border of the screening in a performative direction. Not necessarily having a soundtrack or some dancer on stage, but exploring new way to transform the experience of a screening in something remarkable, something that will somehow affect our own experience of the screening itself, which is in the end the reason why we are still screening films within an auditorium, within a museum. Clemens von Wedemeyer is perfect, somehow is a perfect example of all these three reasons, all the three reasons why we launched this artist trend film. And what will be happening this evening is particularly remarkable because we are not screening a film, as he will explain, but we will go through an exhibition that had to do with film and the research he did for that exhibition and some statements that we would like to explore together with him. Just a few words about Clemens. Clemens von Wedemeyer is one of the most important artists working with moving images that emerged 15 years ago. There is a work of Clemens in Tate's collection. It's called Occupation. It's one of his first work, done in 2002, that we hope to present soon. And I will just remember his participation to Project Sculpture in Münster in 2007 and his remarkable work in 2012 at the Documenta in Kassel, the 13 Documenta in Kassel. And I also imagine that someone of you saw the impressive installation he has done for the Barbican in the Cube called The Fourth Wall in 2009. Which again will have some relation for some of you with the discussion we'll be having later on. As usual, we ask someone to come and have a discussion with the artist we will invite. In this case, we asked Christa to join us. Christa Bluminger, he's professor of film in Paris at University of Paris 8. She was previously professor at University of Paris 3, but she has a very remarkable path within the history of film and art. She is on the board of the Forum Expanded in Berlin, and she wrote a seminal text on a crucial artist. I will recall in particular the work she has done on Harun Farocki. And she started a conversation with Clemens a few months ago about this project, and we decided to continue that conversation with her later on. So please join me now in welcoming on stage Clemens, who will say something. I will only add a word about what we saw right now. I will not speak about the content. I will only say that usually, sorry for that tense moment, in the end we are performing, usually we ask to any artist or filmmaker to provide or to launch the screening we are presenting, and we ask Clemens for a trailer, actually. And he prepared a trailer. The trailer is online on our web page, but then he decided to extend it. And then it's finally up to Clemens to say what will be happening later on and also about what we saw now, maybe.
Yeah, welcome, and I'm very happy that I can be here. What we will do today is already described, so I will just say we will now see three films. The first film actually is called After Image and is meant to be an installation. It's a 300 degree installation, and it's for this occasion made into a version for the cinema screen, so we will talk about it later on. And then the second film is a found footage film called The Beginning, and you will see for yourself. It has all to do with sculptures. And the third film is a film called Procession, the cast Procession. And it's a film I did together with activists and actors from the Teatro Valle, the Valle Theatre in Rome, that was at that time when I was there very important for the city of Rome and the cultural scene. So three films, and in between each film there's a small pause, but we will then come on stage later on. Thank you.
So there we are. So welcome back, Clemens. Welcome, Krista. Yes, I think one of the reasons why I announced that screening as peculiar is that we are going to unfold what we saw now, and we are getting into the process of creating an artwork, which in this case was an exhibition that presented some artworks, and we saw them in a row. And so before the conversation, the actual conversation between Krista Blumine and you, it might make sense that you explain us something about what we just watched.
Yeah. Well, the whole project is called The Cast. As I started coming to Italy in 2013, I was invited by the Maxi Museum in Rome to produce a new work. I was attracted by the idea of material and sculpture, and how a certain belief or is attached to it. Like you could call one film by Harun Farocki maybe as a reference, which is Transmission, Übertragung.
So, which is also an installation.
Which is also an installation, a mute film. So I thought, like, what could I do in Rome and with all these material around me? A second thing was also an interest for Cinecittà, of course, for the film studio. First, I wanted to evade them. I actually researched into more into cinemas and cinema parrocchiale, like church cinemas. That was an interest. And then more and more this idea of what happens with the props as sculptural material happens after the film. And during the times of crisis in Italy, I came across this workshop in Cinecittà was one of the starting points. And maybe we can start with this.
Yes, so I saw this installation or this film first as an installation in Berlin, where it was part of a selection of media art pieces and installations of Forum Expanded, so in a semi-circular screen. And it has a quite immersive effect when you go into it, but maybe this film version, you present it like a film version, which is quite different because you don't have the distorted form of the panorama, which you, of course, you would have if it were projected like on the circular screen, on the flat screen. So it's very interesting to make the experience to be immersed as a spectator, a visitor of the installation, but also see it in cinema, to go through this, to walk by the props, like if you were there. And you hear, you have also this very strong sound experience of the walking, of the path. And it is a quite specific experience because you have this 3D effects that somehow maybe might recall the structure of a video game, because you have this theatrical space. You start with a dark space where it's just a part of the scene visible, but then you are immersed in the entire place. So how did you work and develop this idea, this very specific condition to go back to some film world or cinematic production world with the means of digital technology, which is quite a different gaze that you put that.
So yeah, the special thing about this space is actually it's a workshop for sculptures for cinema since the beginning of Cinecittà, so it's in the third generation of belonging to one family, and they were collecting all the material that they were using for films, bringing them back into the workshop, until actually now they cannot even work anymore there because it's so full of props. At the same time, also these props are not being used anymore today so often, because most of the Sandel films are over. Even the HBO series Rome, which was shot there, is not produced anymore. So it's kind of a space that is not in use anymore. And also the family cannot pay their rent anymore. So and the Cinecittà don't want them there anymore. So it's a place in danger because they are destroying it. So the idea was not to use film material, but to try to find another way of showing this. And with the 3D scan technology, I had the idea of scanning the whole place and in such a way preserving it as a spatial setup, in order to maybe being able to when all the sculptures are being sold or they are brought to another place. So I then made a virtual camera walk through the data file, basically, so to confront this old material, even if it's plaster or plastic, and not real marble, but to confront the material with a new material, which is the point cloud in that case.
It's a new mold somehow. André Bazin in the 50s, he thought about cinema in terms of a mold, in terms of being a medium where reality can leave its traces, or cinema can be like a museum. And you somehow take what is left from cinema and what is already props or imitation, but you you create this digital virtual space that allows new kind of quite realistic somehow exploring modes of exploration of the space. How did you create the movement, or what was the idea about the exploration when you were working about these statues, also in relationship to the two other parts of the whole series, the cast? Because it's all, I guess, about movement and stillness and coming into life of deanimated objects.
The idea was the subjective camera, kind of the POV shot, point of view, so to have like a ghost walking around, and also because it's this camera can walk through walls. So and actually, what was interesting to me was this thing of, the closer you get, the more you look through it. So you cannot actually, you cannot touch it, and you cannot even get close to it, because it just vanishes. And this idea of that the spectator becomes the person being immersed in the space, that was the importance to me. I mean,
because there's no cut. I mean, there's this permanent movement and there's this translucent structure, and it's not like a POV in, let's say, in a classical film that works with a shot counter shot or even a subjective camera that is attached to a body, because it becomes something different. You go through the walls, through the sculptures. It's more dreamlike or ghostly-like.
Also, yeah, it's difficult also to find the dimension if you're really inside the... that's the problem of transferring this experience here, because that's the difference to cinema. When you're in this panoramic installation, you don't know exactly where the screen is. And you lose the dimensions, kind of, and you lose the point to focus.
You called the second part of this threefold installation of film work the beginning, living figures dying. It's a kind of subtitle, so yeah, the beginning. And in one of your interviews or texts, you were quoting Tarkovsky, who had an idea about film as sculpture in time. And it is one of the ways that Tarkovsky took position against, let's say, montage cinema, being interested into the flow of time, into what is happening in the space or the time space of a shot. In your film, The Beginning, which is a found footage film, if we can call it like this, you're also interested in movements and in what is happening in between the shot, but it's more in direct relationship to the sculptures, to sculptures that get alive, and on the other side, to the figure of tableau vivant, to a mode when film more modern filmmakers like Godard or Pasolini created some living sculptures. What is very interesting that we saw it in as a film, as a kind of short film, a found footage film, but in fact it had been shown at the Maxi as an installation. And it is very interesting that the experience of the film is really different compared to the experience you make of this material, the way it is edited. Maybe, I don't know whether you still call it edited or exhibited, arranged on a display with a kind of showcases that make the visitor move. So it's not the shots, not the montage that move, but it's mainly the visitor who goes, steps along. So maybe you could explain a little bit more.
That's often with things that with these videos, I'm of course I was interested in the dramaturgical order in editing these little sequences. At the same time, I did an experiment in that sense in Rome, that we had these windows in the space which were built there by Zaha Hadid. It's part of the building. And so we turned the glass, the windows into screens by projecting onto them. And it was the same film, just each projection had a delay of 6 seconds, which means that the film actually runs through the space. So you can look at scenes, and it's sometimes a bit like an editing room, so you can compare the scene before and after, because you can see both or even more. And even if you lose track, you can walk back in time in a way, and fast enough if you're fast enough, and get back. But it's a completely different experience. Because, it becomes like a timeline, and it becomes like also a kind of panoramic image, but a panorama of the film displayed in time. And I mean, 1 minute at least is always inside the space.
So, and within the film, you somehow show, or you're working on questions of editing or montage, if we put it in Godardian terms, about the gaze, how figures, how characters in classical, but not only, or in modern films, look at, for instance, statues, or look at something that remains off screen. And also the relationship between what the French call hors champ and champ, the on-screen and off-screen. And in the installation, it is maybe even the stage, this kind of question of editing. In one of your, there's a very interesting book, archive books, about the cast Clemens von made together with the Maxi, I think, but it shows that there has been a long period of research That somehow we can see, of course, with these quotes, this work on the found footage material, but you also there's a film list in this book, and the film list is much longer than the films that we see, for instance, in the beginning. And you mention Baroquello Griffis, La Verifica Incerta, for instance, a film, a very important gesture of re-editing gestures of classical Hollywood cinema, and then analyze what is gesture and the gaze in cinema. So could you say a little bit more how you were inspired by maybe those conceptual gestures in the history of art and of cinema, of avant-garde cinema, and how you worked to prepare maybe not only this part, the beginning, but the three films?
Well, yeah, this... Of course, this idea, which later I it took a long time to find the title, but maybe it fits to this idea, actually, the actor becoming part of the film, becoming kind of the sculpture of the film, and the sculpture getting destroyed, and then this fight between sculpture and figures of the film start. So the material of the film, or how it evolves, and how in classical films sculptures are being treated, was interesting to me in the beginning, really only as a research, and only after seeing some films I decided that I could maybe exhibit this research in form of such a film. So I don't know. In a way, this material has different lives, or and it the idea of the three films was that they were. It's a bit for me actually. It's a bit like a development, like an evolution. You have then this. This immobile sculptures of a film production that is not used anymore, and it's immobile and it's dead. And here it's more about becoming alive. And in the, how sculptures become alive.
Like in The Golem by Wegener, for instance, which is in the film.
And then the last film, Procession, which was refers to a historical incident that happened in Cinecittà. I had the idea that to become alive is not enough. What you also have within this life, then there's a kind of struggle for your position or for your political. Or for your working condition or something like this, yeah.
Yeah, and there's this political dimension that is the most obvious in this third part in Procession, because it comes through the off voiceover, and in the end through the credits. But it's all about it's a two. There are two layers. There's this historical layer. It was around the Ben Hur.
During the shooting of Ben Hur
in the end of the 50s, an MGM production in Cinecittà.
Yeah, they were always using a lot of extras, and usually there were plenty of people outside the studio, so they could probably. Literally walk out and ask or tell, we have now work for such and such, or tomorrow we need 3,000 people. And then there were little groups organized by some organizations or even mafia-like associations, like this Catholic cinema association. But that day, and maybe it has to do with technological advances in the film production, that they made model shots or with mirrors, so they didn't need so many real people anymore on set.
And you, in your film, this is very interesting, you are referring also to this multi-layered history of using models. You already have in Fellini's Intervista the use of models of Cinecittà and of real space. And you yourself, in your film Possession, there are parts where you see the director and his assistant or others trying rehearsals with the model, with the space, and then there are rehearsals in the space of Cinecittà. So there is already on this level, there's a long history of the way how Cinecittà, which was founded, as everybody knows, in the 30s by the fascist under Mussolini, how it was used by the Americans who were occupying Italy after the end of World War II, and using Cinecittà for their own cultural and hegemonical somehow claims. And there is the modern cinema that you are referring to as well, like Fellini or Godard. You are also quoting Le Mépris in the beginning, where this kind of decay of cinema is already at stage. You take the quote by Fritz Lang, whom we hear, whose voice we hear in Le Mépris, Fritz Lang saying that
man has created the gods.
The gods, yeah. Yeah, thank you. It's not the gods who have created man. So it's all about the creative process and this relationship between props, statues, and architectural models, the studio, and the process of shooting, and its social background somehow. So how did you relate it? How did it come that you related it to the present now, to this Teatro Valle movement?
Well, yeah, I thought of a kind of, is it possible to create a link between times? That's also something I was interested in the film that I did at the Documenta. So how can there be a kind of solidarity in between times or something? I mean, there's often identification with certain times or certain political struggles. But I came across this incident with Ben Hur, which fit very well to my idea of linking film production to extras and to this struggle. So I asked them if they would be able to, if it would be something they would support or develop with me. But in the beginning, they were not really interested because they thought it was a bit too far away, and their what happened at the moment was, of course, much more important to them. But after a few meetings, found out and developed how it maybe could happen and so on. But yeah, the Teatro Valle doesn't, Occupato doesn't exist anymore, so there was kind of 2-3 year, I mean, not in, at the moment, it's kind of in a change. But there was a very open process in Rome, and everything could have been possible. So difficult also because I worked, or I was interested in Cinecittà and all these institutions in Rome, and I don't know if it was then if it was interesting for the Teatro Valle group to link with these institutions. But what is interesting in this, I think, is also that this film was made after, or also the text which is spoken is was originally written by a journalist that was still living and was also kind of a forgotten figure. And so he was then speaking on the film, so I asked him that he could do the voiceover.
And in the end, the voices that we hear from different people, they are, these are the voices of the movement of the Teatro Valle Occupato?
Yes, these were words and sentences I extracted, or we extracted from the beginning of the conversation we had. So in a way, the idea was that the film is moving backwards in time, so that we see, well, first we see that the camera is mostly moving backwards, and in a way the story is also told backwards. And then at one point, or at the end, we see actually a bit the conversation and the waiting in the beginning of the film, which is then at the end. So they are sitting on the staircase and they are thinking about their position towards the project.
Yeah, and you have this tracking shot from the right to the left, but which is backwards as well. And then this movement, when people speak, you can hear them, then it's a proper movement, I guess. So you work a lot in this film and in the others as well with this relationship between movement, the camera tracking, and this position of the extras, but also the waiting extras who become like statues and who are in this position of being off or being not getting alive on screen or not getting a job. How did you work on this film that was the procession that was shot in black and white, or was it shot in color and only post-produced so that it would look like a film shot in maybe in the 50s? Or
yeah, it was shot on digital video, so we just took away the color at the end. Well, also when we produced, we looked at it in black and white, but in order to maybe create a film that could have been, like, as the person says in the film, at that moment when this happened, this riot, the cameras were all inside the studio. So outside the real life, so to say, there was no camera coverage. So, yeah, that was, I mean, a bit the idea of also testing or being inspired by this architecture. So we shot in the actually in the fascist part of Rome, Eur, which was built at the same time as Cinecittà, more or less, and which still looks like it today. Cinecittà has changed a lot, but Eur was only was stopped during the war and then later finished in the 50s with some museums. So, and this emptiness of this fascist architecture we used as a film set. Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting to see the way who you are dealing with this, we could say, disappearance of a crowd, because at the time, as you just told, the crowd was off screen. There were no cameras, no TV cameras, or it was it was already the beginning of TV time, or no film cameras, documentary cameras shooting this riots. They were only inside Cinecittà, but it was also somehow the end, the golden era, not only of Hollywood, but Hollywood in shooting in Cinecittà and shooting huge crowds. Ben Hur should have been or was shot with 5,000 people. It was the most expensive movie at the time. And there is, of course, this history of the crowd. Somebody like Cecil B. DeMille had a dream. He said that on screen he would like to have a movie where on screen there are as many people as in the movie theater. So Cecil B. DeMille had this idea that the crowd on screen corresponds to the huge theaters filled with the crowd of the spectators. And Serge Danet, the French critic, who was always a very smart commentator of the fate of cinema, he had done several texts about crowd and the idea about the fighting up, the way that Godard and Fellini worked it out. And Danet wrote about the disappearance of the crowd in the cinema with the crisis of cinema, and had the idea that the less people are filing up in cinema, the more people will move, the spectators will move out of the cinema and also watch what he had already a vision about cinema getting elsewhere in the screen, being watched on showcases and not in the cinema anymore. So for him it was also a political sign. And maybe you could explain how you did your kind of archaeological work about Cinecittà as a place with so many histories, cultural and political history. Cinecittà was also a refugee camp after the war, by the way. And the way you are dealing with topics like migrants nowadays, you do it in many of your other works. You always have somehow a political, social component. But here, with your work on Cinecittà, it's also about what the crowd has become, or what these props or these statues have become.
Yeah, I mean, another possibility could have been probably to make an announcement that we are doing a casting show or something like this, and then people would have come maybe for free in bigger numbers, depending on what kind of television we would collaborate with or something like this. But in a way, I thought, okay, reality is so sad, I was looking at many things that were vanishing at time, like even Cinecittà was about to vanish, and this places, and also this the speaker here said, okay, I can do the sound, but you have to hurry up because I have cancer and I don't know how long I will live and so on. So it was kind of running against, that wasn't the importance, but it was like the one of the conditions that reality has its own time. And I wanted to work with the Teatro Valle people also, especially like this, because they had a very clear idea of what they want. Not as the people that could have been also in the film of today. Maybe it's not true, but like the whole crowd is of course more diffuse, and working with people who actually have their own political agenda in that case was pretty precise.
But to work with them. You have been interested in the, let's say, in the role of the extra for a long time. The film Occupation from 2002, which is part of the collection of the Tate Modern, is already a film where you're working about or with the extras.
Yeah, I actually had the same idea as Cecil DeMille at that time. I wanted to really do a film where for the premiere you have the same people in the mass scene on screen than in the cinema. So it was kind of idea of cinema screen as a mirror or an extension of the space. So it's kind of...
But your interest in, let's say, the social or political dimension of the casting of extras being part of the economic fate or the crisis or the rise and the fall of cinema production, this has a long history as well. So how did you work on this story? It's part also of, I guess, a research about Cinecittà. Maybe you could say a little bit more about the process, how you went into this. Yeah, you call it yourself artistic research. And
I don't know
how you would transform it and go find.
Well, in this case, also in others, with the help actually of Paolo Caffoni, who was researching with me onto Cinecittà and on specific things that happened in Rome. We came across these images, and then. By chance, I found this article, so things came together. But it's often right before I made this this film about the former concentration camp in Kassel in Germany, and the different uses of the same space. Also, Cinecittà, as you told, and Avery Gordon, who's also here in the audience and who wrote a text in the book, was interested in this story of what happened in Cinecittà during the war, when the Germans occupied it, and after the war, when it was a camp for displaced persons, and how then kind of reality broke into fiction and fiction broke into reality, and this thing, I, in a way, was very much interested in this working conditions and its struggle in the 50s, because I thought it has maybe something to do with today and the precarity of many creative and non-whatever people in the cities.
So, maybe just one last question before opening, coming back to what we saw before the projection of the three films. You call it part of the diary that you did during the preparation of the films, or a trailer, or maybe you can just name it a little bit more. But what I saw in this material that showed us TV material about democracy in Italy and the kind of period of insecurity, I don't know, intermediate state about an election. And there is this almost anthropological footage while you are filming you processions somewhere in Italy, where some pagan rituals mix or come merge with Catholic rituals, where
I mean, it was a kind of research and experimental testing ground for me for certain things. I knew I wanted to do something with the procession, because that's where kind of the sculpture becomes alive for a certain moment, when it's like carried out of the church around the village and then back into the church, and then it's it breathes air for some time. So I thought that's I need to go around Italy and film these processions. So that's kind of condensed some scenes that I witnessed, and I like to film myself. I mean, I started photographing some time ago, so that was something important for me. And then with Andrea, we thought, okay, can we maybe add something? We don't have the sculptures here, for example, that was exhibited, and this is maybe we can add something filmic or some moving images from my research.
But it reminds me somehow one of the films that you are quoting in the long list that we are referring to, that of films that have been important for you, and you give them even categories. You do a classification. There are films with statues being destroyed. There are films with dead. There are films where statues get alive, etc. One of the films that you quote or that have somehow inspired your work is Statues Also Die by Chris Marker and Alain René, a film, documentary, essayistic film of 53, a film also about sculptures and the idea of the museum, maybe a kind of Malraux idea. And one of the sentences of the beginning of the film is, an object dies when the living glance trained upon it disappears. So the idea that the cult aspect or the religious aspect of an object is, of course, integrated, or it has to be seen in relationship to the practice, to the ritual. And you're working a lot, not only in this, you can see it in the footage, but also in the second film, about, let's say, the gaze, but also about adoration, about the relationship that people have to culture. So you're quoting Le Mépris, the gods, and but showing also Rossellini's visits in the museum. So maybe you could say a little bit more about this interest in the gaze and the relationship to sculptures.
Sure. When the glance of the living disappears, then at maybe at a certain point, and then the camera comes in and is not able to give life to the sculpture, no, because the camera, the eye of the camera is not really alive. It's more like a zombie or something. I think sculptures are replaced by film in a way, or of course this. For me, film is more interesting than producing sculptures, for example, as an artist. But also, I think when exhibiting films, or in this exhibition, the way you place films or the way you are combining them spatially becomes a sculptural, or gets a sculptural quality, and you can actually turn, you're not working with material, but you're working with a space which is not defined before, but you can define it and turn it upside down, for example, or you get the spectator into, this panoramic image, and then when you get out of it, you have a different spatial sensority. That's why the screen of this film, for example, looks from the back a bit like a sculptural case where you carry sculptures from exhibition to exhibition. So it's a bit like the inverted space of a sculpture. When you put a sculpture in the exhibition space, then the gaze is being directed onto the sculpture, but with films, you can more freely distribute the gaze through space. Maybe I don't know if it's correct. But,
yeah. And with the computer animation, yeah.
Yeah, that's a difficult thing because it's not a camera eye. It's a total artificial eye and difficult to adapt.
Thank you, because the very last sentences are really important for us, that we are constantly challenging, also when displaying artworks, the position of moving images of film within a broader context, and we will need to consider always the presence of a painting, of a sculpture, and how to display all that within the galleries. It's a major issue, and it's very interesting for us to get this precise insight about how do you work and how do you consider film as something that is not actually just a screen, but becomes sculptural, and how that will be dealing or engaging with sculptures. Should we open to the audience and some questions? In the meantime, I will only say that we, I think, reached all the issue I was keen to reach, and thank you, Krista, for making such deep questions. I only would like to say that there is another bridge in another direction, which is to performance and to live, which is something that we, for me, was incredibly interesting to discover this evening, in particular, some issues that are crucial when you deal with performances, as, for instance, how to incorporate histories and documentation, how to engage with time and how to engage with histories again, and how to engage with the archive. Is the reenactment still important as it was a few years ago? Should we consider the reenactment an issue that we need to engage with again or not? Are procession models for our procession cinematic models, or our procession interesting events, because they will appear and then take a shape, involve the surrounding environments, and then disappear and leave anything else than just the memory of a strong intensity, or how to invent other or new models to after having shared an experience. So all those issues are actually issues that are related to life and to performance, I would say. So that's another central point that I think we discovered this evening. Is there any question? Yeah. Lovely.
Hi, thanks for the films. They're wonderful. Just on the last film, just to a precision point, I didn't understand from the film what the activist group was activist about. So maybe you could just explain that and why you chose not to make that clear in the film, where the historical event that you were recreating was what you focused upon.
Well, we just talked about it, but in the exhibition, of course it was more easy to get it because you had this other material with it that talked about the case that happened with Ben Hur, with the shooting of Ben Hur. So the story is that there's a film shoot in.
I got that.
Yeah.
What is the 2011 activists about? What are they? I don't understand anything about their political activism.
Yeah. Right. This you can not get from the film, and it's something that might be only interesting for a few people. But what you get is that. This is something actually you cannot explain in the film, or because you it gets out of the film. If I explain it at the end in credits or in titles, like I don't even know what they or we cannot put it like in a few sentences that.
Maybe you could just tell us right now.
Okay.
But they are
right.
The credits.
Yeah.
The credits say something.
So what they did is they were occupying a theater in Rome that was about to close down because it was about to be privatized. And then they started doing an own project of theater, how they think it should be, and engage in questions of political nature and trying to make it a kind of parliament, an alternative parliament for certain issues.
May I just add, I think it's very political or it's a kind of statement to put this in the credits. If you read the credits, you learn that there are activists that have occupied this theater, and they we should see the back, go back to the credits, and struggling for different cultural organization of the theater. So for me, these credits are political in a double sense, because first, not every artist who makes films puts credits. It's also an aesthetical decision to say, I'll show the film as a loop and there's an end and a beginning and I put credits. But there are artists who are just put their name and they make films, very expensive 35 millimeter films with many, many technicians and assistants, but there are no other names. And here we have credits. We have assistants, we have sound engineers, we have... this is a different decision. It's, in this respect, it's a collective work. It's cinema. It's film. And then there is this information that gives us an idea that there is something going on nowadays. And yeah, maybe there's more information in the installation form, but maybe you don't have to know everything about it. But it's just a way to give a contemporary clue.
Yeah, of course, it's a question of how to get out of the film or
But sorry, you are.
I was just wondering about After Image, because I thought, in terms of human subjectivity, because I was curious why you chose to simulate a person or a ghost, as you put it, walking through the space when one of the freedoms of, or one of the privileges of digital materiality is not being bounded to the human hand, the human touch. And so, I mean, when you say that, like, 3D point clouds are a new type of cast, in the sense that one of the things that 3D point clouds can't capture is movement, because if something moves whilst it's going on, right, it goes blurry or whatever. So you have to create the movement within the digital space. So I guess I was just curious why you simulated that.
I chose the kind of anthropomorphic gaze of this walkthrough actually to show the difference, to try to come close to a camera, which could be a Steadicam or something like this, and to show and make you feel that something's wrong here. I think that was the idea too. Because if you see it twice, you understand that all the sounds are artificial, or even if you see it the first time, but even though your brain lets you slip into the gaze somehow of another one, and then it's like a mask you pull over or something, and that doesn't fit all the time.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice parallel with the statues in the space as well. That though their materiality was like very in like originally stone, they're kind of like being forced to take this human form, and I thought that was a nice parallel between.
Mm-hmm.
The foe walking around and the statues, but yeah.
If there isn't any other question, I might try to contextualize a little bit the issue of the Teatro Valle, which makes maybe sense. It's something I will define an experiment. And you will imagine, we need to imagine a longer tradition, that it's a peculiar tradition in Italy, which started in the late 70s of squatting, actually, spaces, and transformed those spaces and places for imagining, sharing, desiring, producing culture, and within a political frame. The Teatro Valle Occupato was pretty peculiar experience, because in the moment when everything was beginning to be privatized in Italy, a group of students, university students, decided to occupy actually a theater which was supposed to, as Clemens would say, close down. And they ran the theater for 3 years and a half, I think, not only as an actual theater, but also producing and inventing spectacles, inviting relevant filmmakers and directors from all over the world, and in a sustainable model. That's the very important thing. So they didn't make, I suspect, on the financial point of view, so they sort of counter-invented a financial model and demonstrated that this financial model will be possible, or is at least possible. In that process of sharing, in that process of reinventing a possible way to share culture with a more than a political, a civic attitude, they also demonstrated that something else is possible. I would say that it's possible somehow to change things. Of course, I guess, and the film is, of course, not about that. It's not about that. It's very hard to witness such a situation, because such a situation will probably jeopardize your intention because of its own intensity. And it's also, of course, really hard to deal with such a situation, because being that a strong collective, as far as I understand, as understood, the strong collective will interact with an artist in a strong way. So you might will add some notes or suggestion about your own experiences. So my impression is that the film, in particular, the film, the cast, is also about the impossibility, the proper impossibility to witness or to deal or to represent with such peculiar situation, temporary kind of gathering of people. And I will not say it's about a failure, but there is something about failing within the whole project, or what is failing and how can we deal with the idea of general failure. So I don't think if I answer to your question, but I just try to give a little bit more information about Teatro Valle, who I guess in Europe become a very important experience that sort of got also recognized and acknowledged internationally because of this sort of different way to struggle. And in the end, I think the issue of getting a position is a very interesting issue, because in the end, the point is, what's our own position? And I think Clemens was claiming the position of the extras, of the outsiders, as both a physical position and a ethical and political position. I may be wrong.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, their problem was in this, that what they said is what we are doing is not we are not struggling for 200 lira or 400 lira that we don't get today from the work, but our project is more utopic and more directed into the future and so on, and more holistic, let's say. So that's what is the difference.
If there is any other question, we might close here. I shall say that, as you know, probably Tate Film is supported by Luma Foundation. This particular event, for this particular event, we need to acknowledge and to thank the Goethe Institute. And I will personally thank this evening Jack Jeans, who worked with us for 7 months and was a sort of crucial support to run and restart the film program at Tate. And I hope to see you again on the 20th of May, when we'll be screening Rosa Barba's new film, and for the next event of the Artist Film Strand, and then again on the 12th of June, when we'll be screening the work that Sharon Locker is actually working on. And so it's going to be even more than a premiere. It's something that is even not finished, and we don't know yet it will be finished. Thank you for coming. See you on the 20th.